Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Stay here because Daniel Buzban is called in and we've got him on the phone. Daniel, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I love this book, but I'm very curious. And I was surprised because I'm of an age when I should have gone to Woodstock, but I was having trouble somewhere else. You write in the introduction, I find this wonderful. As for me, I wasn't there. In fact, I wasn't even born yet. I was born six weeks later on October 1st, 1969. But I certainly heard a lot about it, mostly from people who weren't there either. What is the seed of this book? What sparked your curiosity to the point where you said, I need to write Woodstock 50 Years of Peace and Music?
Well, I mean, initially it was just, obviously it's a musical event. It's very interesting. And if you've been writing about music for a long time, like I have.
Sure.
It's so fertile and there's so much there. But the more I dug into it, the more I found there was really a lot more about the people who went and the sort of like the little society that they built while they were there for a few days, under some pretty difficult circumstances.
No kidding. Were you amazed when you dug into it? I'm sure you must have been about some of the hardships faced not only by the people in the crowd, but certainly financially by the guys, mostly guys, who produced the thing. Was any of that like a shocking revelation to you? Because at a certain point, Woodstock was so mythologized that it seemed like this Edenistic utopia, and it wasn't, was it?
No, quite the opposite.
Yeah.
As far as what you're saying, as far as like the financial hit that the guys took, it was much worse than I would have imagined.
Exactly.
Because, like you're saying, the mythologizing, I think is the word that you used.
Sure.
Especially at a 50-year distance is, I think it makes most people just who weren't there look at it and go, this was wonderful. Everything about this was wonderful.
But they must have made so much money. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Turned multiple profits, of course. It took better than a decade for them just to get out of debt.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know some of the lengths that the acts went to get paid. There's a lot of quite interesting stuff, some of which didn't make the book because I didn't want to get anyone in trouble.
Sure, sure.
But, the guys from Sha Na Na, it was their first paying gig ever, and they got $200, which their management took $100 off the top, and the check bounced.
Did you find in writing and researching Woodstock 50 Years of Peace and Music, did you find a number of people shocked that Sha Na Na even performed at Woodstock? I mean, I've certainly seen the documentary. I certainly knew Sha Na Na was performing. But do you find that shocks a bunch of people?
Over and over again, to this day, anytime I mention it, I'll tell people, like, yeah, I interviewed Elliot Kahn, who was the guitar player for Sha Na Na, and be like, why did you interview Sha Na Na for a Woodstock book? Like, because they played at Woodstock. They played right before Jimi Hendrix.
I know. It's Jimi Hendrix closed the show. You go through, the book is wonderful. It's got a number of wonderful photographs. It's got, the chapters are short. There's a chapter about each band and performer who played there. One of the most fascinating double trucks you have in here is artists who didn't perform. Now, I have four smart people here. I've got to tell you, I can understand John Lennon not performing. I can understand Bob Dylan doing whatever the hell Bob Dylan wants to do. I can sort of understand the Doors not doing it. The fact that Roy Rogers was asked to perform and was actually, the producers wanted him to be the final act. That is one of the most stunning facts I have ever learned.
Yes. They wanted desperately for him to come, but he wouldn't do it. You know, obviously, in retrospect, that's not hard to imagine that, you know, that he would want nothing to do with it.
Sure, he must have been, you know, I don't know Roy Rogers and didn't know him, but I can imagine the feeling at the time was, I don't want to be around no hippies, wouldn't you think?
Thousands of hippies.
How is the, and then there's another great take later in the book about that on August 19th, 1969, Dick Cavett featured people on his show. He devoted, the guests included Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, wearing, and you, as you write, the muddy clothes in which they had performed. I had no memory of that either. This must have been, Daniel, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name, Buckspan, must have been one of the many revelations for you in writing this.
That, honestly, was not that hard for me to picture. I had actually seen that episode before.
Oh, wow.
You could, well, you, it's out there, like on YouTube and Shout Factory TV. It's not that hard to find. The things that I was surprised by had more to do with, the fact that the whole thing went off at all. The fact that any of it happened without this huge disastrous consequences.
Yeah.
To me, that was really the story. We saw a very good American Experience on PBS. They just did a special about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how at one point, Joel Rosenman, who is one of the promoters, he spoke to me about this, that at one point during the heaviest downpour of rain, some electrical cables had become exposed that people were walking on. And he mentioned that it was something like you had 10,000 wet hippies in bare feet all pressed together walking on exposed electrical cable in the rain. To me, that's the story. You know, that nothing bad happened there. That's incredible. You know, the fact that Stephen Stills' jeans were muddy is less...
Yeah, less dramatic. It's a less dramatic element to it. Who do you write music for? I mean, you're a freelance writer, and you've written for all manner of places. What music do you concentrate on when you're writing now, in contemporary?
Mostly, I tend to focus on a lot of legacy acts, because they're doing stuff now that I think is very interesting in terms of packaging and repackaging old music that's out there already. You know,
like the Rolling Stones.
Yes, the Rolling Stones are a perfect example of that. And also these companies that are bringing back deceased musicians through hologram technology.
Well, it's funny. My brother, Mark, who was for a time Dylan's road manager and Frank Sinatra's road manager, runs a thing called Legends in Concert, which is playing Atlantic City now, which is, you know, they have these people who are the leading imitators of these dead stars, and they draw 1,500 people a night. That is a phenomenon to me. What do you attribute that to? People trying to relive their childhoods?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's nothing more than just nostalgia. You know, when we hit a certain age, you know, that becomes a very salient thing. It's hard to keep up with. I'm about to turn 50, and it's just hard for me at this point to keep up with, you know, new music, pop culture, what's going on like right at this minute.
Sure.
Just because there's so much of it.
No, and it's a tidal wave. It's a tidal wave every day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I mean, I do feel like it's my responsibility as a music journalist to at least be aware of what's going on. But there's so much out there, and it changes so quickly that it's just hard to keep up. But then, you know, you put on, like, you know, Hot Rocks by the Rolling Stones, and you're just transported back to this much easier time when you had no responsibilities and it was very simple. That's always going to resonate with people.
I get it. No, that's very, very well put. I think your book will resonate with people too. Again, it is Woodstock 50 Years of Peace and Music. The author is Daniel. I will spell the last name, but you can
Thank
get
you.
It by just doing B-U-K-S-Z P-A-N, I will leave you with this. I want you to comment on this for 1 second. You write in the book, the world today feels far removed from the one in which Woodstock was possible, when more than 400,000 strangers congregated peacefully for 3 days. Every person responsible for it deserves recognition and deserves to be remembered. Is that in part, Daniel, I don't need to get into your deep philosophy of life, but that the world has become a less innocent place than it was 50 years ago at Woodstock?
I just can't see today a crowd that's the size of the population of Cleveland all getting together in one place with no bathrooms and no food.
Yeah.
And there's no rioting.
Yeah.
I just can't see that happening. There was already, in the 1999 Woodstock.
Sure.
Already it wasn't working out anymore. Yeah. And here we are 20 years after that.
Yeah.
So, I'm not trying to even make a point with it or anything like that. I couldn't see it today. That's all.
Daniel, it's a marvelous book. The book is Woodstock, 50 Years of Peace and Music. I hope we get to talk again when your next book arrives. So congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Chicago Story is told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 10 o'clock. I'm thanking my three lovely people from Lake County and my lovely person from 95th and Cottage.